Hi, everybody. My name's Roy. I'm an alcoholic. I'm going to take about a minute or two to identify and participate in my recovery a little bit. And I want to thank Eddie for being here today. He's my sponsor, and when Eddie and I first met, I wasn't playing with a full deck, and I'm still not today. But anyways, the only requirements for this membership is the desire to stop drinking. And I had drank my share, and I wasn't cheated. And I know what the disease of alcoholism is all about, because it damn near killed me. And what I have is I can't give it away. It's always waiting for me, and it's always going to do it to me. And as long as I don't go around where it's slippery, I got a chance. We're going to change the floor mat here just a little bit. We're going to have a 10-minute speaker, and then we'll have Eddie pick up the rest of the time. Carl?
Hey, man! Morning, my name's Carl. I'm an alcoholic. I'm not sure why Roy and Eddie wanted me to do this, but, you know, I love to do it. You know, Alcoholics Anonymous is the end-all, be-all of my existence. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I love what I get to do in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I love Eddie C. He's also my sponsor. And one of the greatest compliments I ever got was I drove up to Lancaster to speak on a Saturday night, and I got up there, and up there on the board, big blackboard, it said, "Tonight's speaker, one of Eddie C.'s babies." That was it, and I just, you know, I've been following him around for quite some time now, and he's changed my perception. I don't know if I'd be standing here today without him, and I'm forever grateful, and, you know, for a guy like me to reap the benefits of in my eyes, a legend of Alcoholics Anonymous, is an amazing thing that I get to spend time with him and driving up here, and I get to, every once in a while, get to drive him when he goes to speak. When I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I was, there was no way for me to stop drinking. I had wound up in the Navy as a result of a bad drug deal where I'd gotten ripped off, and that's about the time I decided I had a patriotic duty to serve the Navy. And I wanted to get the hell out of town, and I joined the Navy, and within a year and a half, they had me on Anabuse, and I couldn't stop drinking. I drank on Anabuse for 7 months prior to getting to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I was going absolutely insane. There was no way for me to stop drinking. I was convinced of this. And I would drink on the Anabuse. I would lock myself in a hotel room and take one shot every 15 minutes. And I knew that a certain reaction would happen from Anabuse, and what would happen is I would turn bright red in the face, hyperventilate, sweat, and then start to throw up. And I found out the magic of Anabuse happens after I throw up for a couple hours. I would not throw up anymore, and I'd just be red-faced, hyperventilating, and sweating. And that was okay with me, and I'd go on about my business of drinking. And I'd go out and drive, usually, and wind up in jail. And the Navy was getting pretty sick and tired of me showing up drunk. And they were sending me to psychiatrists. My father's a Lutheran minister, and I'd call him for help, and I'd been calling him for help for years, and he'd try to share something with me, and I couldn't do it, and I couldn't stop drinking, and I was going downhill fast. And I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, and another guy on my ship had 14 months sober. He became my first sponsor, and he started sponsoring me before I even knew he was sponsoring me. He just started dragging me around to meetings, more meetings, and then a few more meetings, And the miracle started to happen in my life, and he gave me some good direction. And you may wonder, well, how can a guy with 14 months give good direction? And I often found out that whenever I had a problem, he'd run to the phone. Now, the thing was, he had a sponsor with about 10 years, and he'd say, "What do I do with him now?" And I found that was kind of what happens around here, you know. I was under a lot of misconceptions. I would start meeting women in Alcoholics Anonymous, seeing as how they're going to so many meetings, and I'd go out to coffee, And I'd run to my sponsor and say, "Hey, God put her in my life. God put her in my life. I'm convinced God put her in my life." And you know, something would happen and she'd leave, I'd leave. I don't know, the first one, she had 4 years, I had 90 days. She got drunk 2 weeks after we started going out, and I guess God didn't put her in my life to show me how to stay sober. And the next one, and I ran to my sponsor again, and God put this next one in my life. I'm convinced of it, and a fellow heard me saying that in the back of a meeting, and he jumped in, and nobody asked him to say it, but he informed me that God was not a pimp. And I don't know it. I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, and they told me it was a disease, and that's a comforting feeling. That's a comforting feeling that it's not my fault. But then the bad side of that coin was, man, I had to live up to everything I had done and make some sort of amends. And I was forced into that. I was tricked into it, and I didn't want to do it. I didn't make amends and do that stuff. out of any pretense of working a good program. I did it because I absolutely was going insane without a drink. You know, that mental obsession that led up to the first drink was killing me. You know, I was 25 years old, hadn't done a damn thing with my life. I was in a lot of trouble. And you know, after just going to a whole lot of meetings, after 2 years, the Navy gave me an honorable discharge. And that was the first thing I'd ever accomplished in my life. And you know, and I moved up to Los Angeles and I met Eddie C. And that's about the point where my sobriety really took off. He changed what I got to do in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I've been following him around, and I guess you could call me an Eddie-ophile, I guess. You know, I just follow him around and I listen to him and I listen to him and I call him as much as I possibly can without making a nuisance of myself. But man, he has got some answers, and you're in for a real treat today, and I'm not going to take up any more time because he's got a whole lot more answers than I do for you. And I'm glad to be here. Thanks.
Okay, Eddie, it's all yours.
All right.
There you go, baby.
My name is Ed, and I am an alcoholic.
Hi, Ed.
Glad to be here. Of course, I'm at the age now of just being anywhere is kind of fun. Waking up is really exciting. Those of you that have problems, how about just waking up? You know? Something that's really exciting, yeah. Leroy, I met Leroy when he was brand spanking new. He'd just gotten out of a funny farm. He got out of Thorazine Gulch, you know. And, he shuffled into the meeting. And short deck, he didn't have any deck at all. Matter of fact, God's given him one card a year, so he's got 27 cards to go, Leroy. Yeah. Anyway. And the funny thing about it, guys like Leroy and me and a lot of others, and Carl, you know, it reminds me of my sponsor I had for 30 years, which was Chuck C. And he used to say, and it's true, certainly true in my case, in Carl's and also Leroy, and that is the fact that I can't stay sober. There ain't no way I can stay sober, and yet here I am again today. You know, how the hell did that happen? You know, I ain't no way I can stay sober. I got to have something, a little pill or something. I mean, how do you sleep? I mean, come on. I mean, God almighty. I mean, I get nervous, you know, and sex really drives me crazy, you know, with or without, you know, I mean. And, you know, so in other words, I can't stay sober, and yet here I am all these years later. And it's today. Today's my birthday, as a matter of fact, today. And my group where I go all the time, which is the 502 Club over in Covina, they give cakes at the end of the year. Well, hell, I'll be well in my 40th year by the time they give a cake out, you know. You know what I mean? So I told them, I'm going to get a cake in Newhall. They said, where's Newhall? And I think that's the shit. Where's Newhall? Told me it's, well, it's not the end of the earth, but you can see it, right? Matter of fact, I remember we were talking about that. I remember the guy that started this meeting out here 35 years ago. I think it was about 35 years ago. Jim something or other. A lot of fun. I've been out here a lot of times, you know. And I'm excited about being a member of AA, too, you know. And the reason I really am wild about Carl is because Carl reminds me of me when I got here, you know. It's, in other words, this is it. The life is over. Dig a hole. I'm going to get in. I don't want to go, but there's no place else to go. And I think when you get to a place in life where two things scare you, one is being sober and the other one is being drunk, it's really a time for a change. And that's kind of where I was. And that's kind of the impression Carl gave me when I first met him. And all of a sudden, he did the same thing, I guess, that I did. And it really had nothing to do with me. He gives me a lot more credit than you know, you got to remember Bill and Bob. They were here long before I was, you know. Matter of fact, the guy introduced me at a meeting in La Cañada one night, and he said, oh, I introduced Ed, he's a legend in his own mind, you know. And he apologized later. I told him I really am a legend in my own mind. But I, you know, in other words, I don't know about anybody else, but I'm a little different in a lot of ways than a lot of people who come to AA, because if you come here young now, hell, that's nothing, you know, nothing. As a matter of fact, the secretary at a Saturday night meeting at Covina is 15, you know. And she'd been sober, what, 2 years? Yeah. What the hell? I mean, big deal. If you're old enough to die, you're old enough to live, whatever the case may be. And sure, she used a lot of drugs, but so did I. When I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, nobody here used drugs. But in fact, you didn't even talk about it. Matter of fact, I got a letter from a Pacific Group guy because I mentioned drugs. I'll bet he's taking Valium. What do you want to bet? What do you want to bet? He doesn't want to give up his sobriety. You're dropping him goddamn pills. That's somebody's talking about drugs. I'll be goddamn, you know. We lose more people, you know, because they forget that one is just as bad as the other. Alcohol is a drug. It's ethanol, you know. It's a depressant drug. And it's addictive, according to the book of pharmacology. And I always tell somebody that's been heavy into heroin, have you tried wine lately, you know? Wine is worse than heroin ever was. And I, you know, I know. I'm both. And so when I arrived here, I was a young people. If you want to have a young people's meeting, I was it. Well, nobody else, just me. And they didn't look like me. They didn't talk like me. Matter of fact, the guy who made the 12-step call on me still goes to Burbank. His name is Johnny Sawyer. He's still over there. Got a crew cut. He's only as gray now. You know, he never wears his teeth. I have no idea what that's all about. Even George Washington wore teeth. You know, I didn't know there was, but Johnny doesn't wear his teeth. And he's still over there, you know. And years ago, he told me when I was brand new, go to meetings. He said, if you're an obsessive person, you got to become obsessed about something that will save your ass. Go to meetings. And we had a long-timers convention in Newhall about 3 or 4 years ago. It was over here at one of the schools. And I went over, and I forgot to ask him, do I still have to go to them? Go to meetings. I keep forgetting to ask him. And I still go to meetings. I'm going to ask you one day, do I have to go to all them goddamn meetings still? 39 years? She said, well, do you still have the disease, you know? Yeah, I still have the disease. Go to meetings. So I've cut down, you know, after, you know, like 39 years, I've cut down. I probably don't go to more than 4 or 5 a week now. You know, I'm really slowing down. I've got to watch that shit. You know, I don't overdo it. You know, overdose on AA, you know. Can you imagine? Overdose on AA. Anyway, how would you like to get here and nobody knows what the hell you're talking about? Now, if you smoke enough weed and take enough pills and put enough things in your body, up your nose and in your arm, if you're like me, eventually when you get here, there's only one cell flickering. I was here 3 years and still saying an-nom-a-nom. An-nom-a-nom, 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 an-nom-a-nom. I was so cool, I couldn't speak English. I'm serious, and I was raised in Glendale. They speak English in Glendale. Well, not anymore, but they used to. And I couldn't speak English. I mean, I didn't know what the hell anybody was talking about. But by the same token, they didn't know what I was talking about. You know? Remember the first time they asked me, they had the balls to ask me to get up to talk. And that was at old 1717. And they asked me to get up, and I told them about uppers. They thought I meant teeth, you know. I told them about dropping reds. They thought I was, you know, killing communists. They didn't know. And I really couldn't explain smoking shit. I really couldn't explain it. I had a hell of a time with that one. So I don't, you know. So they just told me, keep coming back, honey, the little old lady. Keep coming back. We don't care what you have. Keep coming back. And I find out what they did not know and what I have learned over the years, because my people are here now. You know, they're people who just have drank nothing but alcohol are really kind of dinosaurs anymore. You know, because everybody's taking something. I mean, if you got to put a straw in your nose just once to see what it's like. You can be the smartest son of a bitch in the world for a few minutes. Oh, God damn, man, son of a bitch. And then, oh, shit. I like about cocaine. You know. And so the reason I like being here is because of the fact that you don't get smart here. I'm not, you know, I can pronounce anonymity now, but, you know, I don't get smart here because I don't know what it is. All I know is that it works, and I show up. I don't want to know what it is. I just want to be able to walk in. I feel it right now. Whatever it is, don't go away, you know. And it seems like it works the best when we all get together. And there's a gal in the book, and she'd been dead for years now. Her name was Wynne Laws, and she wrote a story in a book. It's called Of Human Bondage. And I knew Wynne real well. She used to talk a lot in AA, you know. And every time she'd talk, she'd always get that grin on her face. Only Chamberlain had that same look. You know, he looked like that, and she looked like the only thing is Chamberlain would give this. I don't know what the hell that means. You know, makes you paranoid as hell when somebody does that. But she'd look out there, and she'd get that grin. Her eyes were sparkling. You knew she was on something. Both of them two were on something, Chuck and her both. And they give you that look, and she'd say, it's in the room. And I'm sitting there thinking, I'm kind of weird, you know. If Leroy had been there, I'd ask him, what the hell's in the room, Leroy? You know, he'd say, you know. Because I remember one time, I went down to one of them funny farms down there. And they used to have one down there, down near the beach. Sawtell's where it was. And they had some alkies in there, and they were, you know, Korsakoff. They were wet-brained dudes. And there were some really weird ones in there, and they were giving them all good shit. Thorazine and Stelazine and, oh, and Prolixin, all kinds of good shit. And they were sitting there at the meeting drooling, you know. We'd go into the meeting, and they'd unlock the door and let you in. And then they'd lock the door behind you when you get in. You were in with all those funny folks, man, you know. And some guy, they were looking at you, you know, like, oh, man, look at this dumb sumbitch, man, you know. This is our speaker today, and he doesn't even have any pills, man. I don't know, he ain't got anything to say. And when I got in there, there was this one guy, and he had his head against the wall. And he kept doing this to me. I didn't know he could cut me up with an axe, so I went over there, and I wanted to know. He didn't say anything, but what he was trying to indicate, he wanted me to put my ear on the goddamn wall. So I did. I kept it there for about 2 minutes, and I said, I don't hear anything. He said, it's been that way all day. You remember that, Leroy? Depends on where you are, right? If you don't like coming to AA, just think of that Thorazine ghost with your head on the wall, waiting, listening to nothing for hours. But the amazing part is that I finally arrived here, one cell or not, you know. And sure, I was young. Young in those days, not young by today's standards. But I was young in those days, and everybody was old. And I went to the Burbank. First meeting I ever went to was in Burbank on Pacific. And they met in a Quonset hut. And they just started that meeting about 2 or 3 months prior to that, or maybe 6 months before that. They started the Burbank meeting there. A guy named Clyde started it. And the reason he started it is because they wouldn't let him lead a meeting at Thursday night in North Hollywood because he didn't have 3 years yet. And so he got his pound of coffee and Dunkin' Donuts and started his own goddamn meeting. Still going in Burbank. That's how the Burbank meeting got started. And the night that I went there was a Friday night, and it was a speaker meeting. And it was the place was packed because Chuck C. was going to be the speaker. There was about 30 people there that night, which was a big meeting. And they didn't have any chairs and tables like this. I mean, they weren't sophisticated like that. They had benches. And they didn't have any styrofoam cups, just coffee cups. That's all they had, you know. And they didn't have writing all the wall like think, 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 because that's the one thing you never want to do here. Because your head brought you here. Stop and think about it, you know. And they didn't have, you know, anything on the wall. The only thing they had on the wall when I walked in was a Serenity Prayer. I saw that on the wall. And I don't know about you, but if you use enough drugs, enough alcohol, after a while, this doesn't work too well. I don't know if you know that or not. You have a hard time concentrating. You may be asking people, like, where are we? You know, and you're in your own front room, maybe. And I looked up there, and I saw that Serenity Prayer up on the wall, and my first thought was, my God, I hope they don't want me to remember all that. You know, that was my first thought. And when I sat down at the meeting, I'm sure they didn't. They didn't have any traditions in those days. They didn't read any traditions, and they certainly didn't read Chapter 3. As a matter of fact, they started reading Chapter 3 in Burbank on Wednesday night. As a matter of fact, that's where they started. They started reading Chapter 3 of Jack S. and Kenny E. and a bunch of guys used to go to that meeting, and they wanted to get even with the old farts on Friday, so they started reading Chapter 3 instead of Chapter 5. Now, that's pretty how weird they were, you know. And they didn't read it, and I'm sure that somebody read something up there, and I'm sure they had a leader, but I don't remember that. Now, I'm not too well at my first meeting, because the place was getting dark and light. And I'm sitting there like that, and also I'm listening to this thing go. You know, I got a little drummer in my chest, but he doesn't know how to beat steadily. There you go. Oh, there it goes again. Oh. You're always waiting to hit the floor because you know you're dropping dead on the next beat, you know. It keeps you busy, I'm telling you. You don't hear a hell of a lot when you're listening to yourself go all the time, you know. Crossing the street becomes a project, you know. And you watch kids do it, you know that if they can do it, you should be able to. And then one of them comes back and gets you, and you're only like 29 years old. I had that happen to me all the time, you know. And all of a sudden they introduced the speaker for the night, and it was Chamberlain. I never seen him before. You know, and he was an old timer in AA. He had about 5 years, I think, Mark, something like that. Something like that, I'm not sure. Somewhere 4 or 5 years, something like that. He goes, "Hi, my name's Chuck. I'm an alcoholic." Now, if you smoked as much weed as I have, you are totally paranoid, you know. And the only thing I can't stand is somebody looking me right in the face and laughing at me. And that's what he was doing. He was looking right at me. I thought, oh, shit. Well, what the hell are you doing, man? And you'd think, you know, raised in Glendale where they speak English, I didn't know what the hell he was talking about. I didn't know what the hell he was saying. He talked up there, and people were laughing all over the place. And he's laughing, and they're laughing, and I'm thinking, what the hell's going on here? You could tell I was out of it. And then pretty soon he got to crying. You know, big tears running down his eyes, and people were crying, and he was crying. And I'm thinking, what the hell's going on here? And the last time I saw him alive was about 3 months before he died, 1984. And I reminded him of him saying it. Now, I don't know if your brain is about half turned off, and you're used to getting loaded, and it's just a period. Loaded means taking something. Getting loaded, you know. Then this would appeal to you. Because I'm sitting there like this, one brain cell going, and he says, it's terrific! And I said, what the hell's terrific, man? Give me some. Where do you take it? I'm ready. Because terrific is something inside. Now, non-alcoholics don't know about that inner world, you know. They think drinking is something you do to be sociable. You know. Oh, I can't have any more. I've had one. I've got to work tomorrow. Come on. How about getting loaded in screw work, you know? Matter of fact, I remember being drunk in Newhall once. Now, that's the epitome. I have no idea. I didn't know anybody in Newhall. I'm drunk and on my ass out here, you know. Going somewhere. Woke up in Mojave. I really had a lot. I had a lot of fun, you know. I'm one of them kind of guys, I don't know about you, I'm one of the kind of guys that said, did we have fun? You know, because I don't remember. How the hell are you going to know when you're not here most of the time? You're just kind of out of it all the time. That's how kind of how I was. That's kind of why Chamberlain kind of ripped my gourd, because I didn't know what he was saying, but there was something that he was feeling that was blowing me away, and I didn't know what it was. And it was just kind of permeating the whole goddamn place. And people seemed to be turned on by it. I didn't know what the hell it was. You know? Give me some, man. Give me some of that. Give me some of that. And I thought maybe it was in the coffee or something. And at my first meeting, there were some gassy goddamn people there. There was a guy there, a little Jewish guy, and his name was Maury, and he used to always come up to you, I don't ever could figure out why he did that. He always come up to you and put his hand out and he'd say, keep coming back. And if you ask him to come up during stand-up participation, he'd say, my name's Maury, I'm an alcoholic, keep coming back. That's all he ever said. And his name was Keep Coming Back Maury. So they started an expression in AA, keep coming back. Came from Maury. He was at that first meeting. I remember him. There was another gal, they made a movie about her. You know, as a matter of fact, Carol Burnett played the part about Beatrice. She was at that meeting. Her name was B. We call her B. Hiya! She was marrying Carl Day, marrying the guy who started the meeting about that time. She married a lot of people. You know. I used to say, what's her last name? Then she started Friendly House. She was there. You know, she was there. And Chucky Baby, of course, he was there. All these people. And Henry, who actually went to Colorado, was sober. Christ, he got sober the year Christ left Chicago, I think it was, something like that. Been sober forever. He was there. But all these... And it was a lot of sobriety in Burbank in those days, like 5 or 6 years. That was a lot of sobriety, I'm telling you, because Bill Wilson had 15 years, you know. That was a lot of goddamn sobriety. All these 5 and 6 year olds. And whenever they said anything, the rest of us, like when Jack S. came in finally, we'd all sit around and take notes. They said heavy shit, like, keep coming back. Did you hear that? Keep coming back, man. Easy does it. Easy does it. I got that one. Live and let that other asshole live too, man. You know. I always thought those were bumper stickers. I found out that what they mean is something you're supposed to do. You know, I didn't know that. I thought live and let live was a bumper sticker. Because every once in a while I see it on the back of somebody's car and they're on their way home meeting, the guy just giving his old lady hell, you know. I say, hey, go back and look at the bumper sticker, man. Then get back in the car. Live and let live. In other words, you do your living, let them do their living. Let them make their mistakes, you know. And when you're brand new, you know, you get the idea somebody's going to do it for you. Hey, man, I need some money. Go to work. They still say that over at 502 Club. You going to work yet? They'll holler some bitch coming in, some brand new guy, screwing around, you know, messing around, hanging around the club bums, you know, no kind of stuff. Never go to work, just hang around the club. I like to go to work, but I got to go to the club. After you've been here a year, you can tell them where they should put the coffee machine. You know, who should be secretary? You know, I know all about that stuff. Anyway, getting back to them early days for me, you know. And one of the things that we did in the early days in Burbank, and I hope they do it out here too, was they had a lot of activity going. I mean, they had activity going. And they had road camps and hospitals. And one of the road camps we used to go to was a place out here called, it was in Saugus. It was a drunk tank. And they used to fill it up with drunks. And that's all it was out there, drunks. Some judge in L.A. was filling them up with drunks. And we'd go out there, and well, we'd walk in, you know, like I had about 3 years then. I was really getting heavy. And I walk into that meeting out there, and they would say, "Here come the soda pop boys." That was us, the soda pop boys. And all those drunks were out there playing dominoes, whatever they were doing. They'd have to stop playing so we could get up there and talk. And they didn't have any of this yet. Much like talk to 500 people with no PA. "My name's Ed, I'm an alcoholic." The guy said, "Can't hear you back here." "Screw you." "I heard that, okay." They had a lot of funny farms, a lot of funny farms. Had road camps out here. This area was loaded with, and Wayside, oh, Wayside. Go out and tell the poor guys in jail how to live on the outside sober, you know. Every once in a while, somebody comes out of jail and stays sober. Every once in a while, I had a baby for 25 years. He finally died in Texas. He just walked out of the Wayside, never had another drink. You know, here we can tell. Another guy I had, a little Jewish guy, he's still over there in Whittier. He was out there, geezing out there. He was in a drug rehabilitation place out there called CRC. We all went out there and had a meeting. He came out. He's been clean sober ever since. Dumb sound bitch. Me, he could be out there. Probably they got some new stuff out called Crystal Ice, man. It'll keep you up for 4 days. He's going to miss all that shit, man. He could be bright for 3 days. Just keep walking and talking, man. You know? Smoke that Crystal Ice, you know. I get to thinking about that stuff. I miss all that. Don't you miss all that good stuff? Acid, I missed acid. God almighty. Could take a trip, maybe never get back. Somebody said, taking a trip on acid is not the trip that's the problem, it's re-entry. You get burned coming back sometime. Maybe you don't even get back at all, you know. And I'm one of them kind of guys, I don't know about you, but that's one of the reasons I think AA has worked so well for me, is that I was a garbage can. I never sat around and used the mating cry of the asshole.
Yeah, but...
That's a newcomer, always.
Yeah, but...
You tell a newcomer,
"No, yeah, but..."
You know. And tell them if you got a baby to give you. Tell them it's a mating cry of the asshole, man. You know. "Yeah, but my foot." And that's what I did when I was getting loaded. If you handed me something, I didn't say, "What is that?" "It's red. What is that? Does it have side effects?" I was hoping it did. Remember, I took everything I ever took. I always took alcohol. You know. And one of the reasons I took all those things is that I didn't want to be like Mom and Dad. So I took everything. People say, "What did you take?" I never counted. I work in a DUI school. Every once in a while, we may ask people if they remember what they had to drink on their last arrest. How many drinks? What were they drinking? And I think that's real funny because I never knew. When I was coming home, I never knew even where I was even in the car. I was driving my head on dashboard. One and only time they ever got me, I was on the wrong side of the street. And I think it's genetically because I'm actually English. And I must have thought I was in England. I never even been there, you know. Because I was on the left-hand side of the street on Glen Oaks in Burbank. And a cop opened the door and I fell out over my head, you know. I looked up and said, "What's wrong, officer?" I called him Ossifer, which is, gives him a clue there's something wrong. Yeah. I never went home until I was saturated. I never how to say, "No, I wouldn't have any more. I got to go to work tomorrow." Never come up with that kind of shit. More, 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 more. Then 20 minutes later, "Hey, let's have a drink." That was the way this thing worked. Let's have something. As you spent your whole life obsessed with taking things, the idea of living on this planet without chemical aids is inconceivable. And that's what blows me away from meeting one in Burbank and Chuck C. talking. The obsession to use drugs and alcohol disappeared. Just went away. They used to have a commercial years ago on the radio. "I wonder where the yellow went when you start using Pepsodent." And that's kind of what happens when a person like me comes here. And for some reason they get active and are too sick to not get active. You know what I mean? Too sick, not get active. Wash some dishes. You go wash some dishes. Pick up some ashtrays. Pick up some ashtrays. You don't say, "Why do I pick up ashtrays?" You just pick up the goddamn ashtrays, you know. stand there at the door and greet everybody that comes in. But this is a cold goddamn group. It won't be if you stand at that door for a week. All that kind of stuff. They start laying on you. You know, when guys like me, when we get here. And the first thing you know, we find ourselves all of a sudden having fun. Because the one thing that drove me crazy that Chuck used to say is terrific. It's terrific. And I couldn't figure out what the hell he was talking about. What's terrific? You know, I remember when I used to go to the early NA meetings. We used to have them there in the first meetings at all were in with Sun Valley, and we didn't have anything, so we used to take a book, and we'd take a book like this, and we'd take the word 12-step, take the word alcohol, cross it out, and put the word addict above it. And I remember those guys coming in. They were all heroin addicts. They were maybe two or three of them, two Mexican kids from L.A. and another guy. And they were looking at the big book, and I finally figured out what they were doing and trying to figure out how to cook the book up and get it in line. I mean, how can anything like that dumb 12 steps and 12 traditions take the place of hi there? And it does. And it does, you know. And it started doing it for me. And I found myself one time riding out with old Johnny S., who's been sober forever, old Johnny Sawyer, riding out there, and Jack S. was riding with me. He was a newcomer then. I had about a year on him, so I could kind of give him the message, you know. We're riding out to some road camp out there where they had 270 PCs. Those are what the district attorney called deadbeat dads. You know what I mean? They weren't paying, and they were out laying. And so they had them all out there together. And a lot of them had alcohol problems, obviously. We're going out there. And I'm just riding in the back seat with Jack. You know? And all the old-timers up front, 6 and 7 years, were riding up there in the front talking that heavy shit, you know, and us newcomers back there. And they used to tell us, newcomers, your lips are moving, you're lying, they used to tell us, you know. Shut up, we know how to get drunk. And he was telling us that shit. Put your hand up. Shut up, we know how to get drunk. Shut up, we know how to get drunk. He was telling us that. I must have something to say. No, you don't. Shut up. You know, stick something in your mouth and you open these sumbitches, you know. I mean, maybe you'll learn how to live, you know. So we're riding out there. We don't say anything. Jack and me, we're good students while we're sitting there listening to these two old farts sitting up there in the front. And we finally get out to this road camp. And the leader that night was a guy who was my sponsor for my first year, Jimmy. And he got up. And while he was up there, he was calling some of the people that had come out there to share. And all of a sudden, I heard him say these words. We got a fella, been here a little while, doing a fine job. Ed, come up here. And I thought, oh, shit, he's talking about me, man. What am I going to say? And I said to the guy sitting alongside me, I said, what do I say? And he said, tell him what happened to you. So I went up there and I told him what happened to me, blow for blow, bottle for bottle, drink for drink, year for year. That's the old saying, you know, at 9:55 at night and the guy hasn't gotten to AA yet, you know what I mean? Think, God damn, you better get to AA, he's going to run out of time, you know what I mean? And that's what I did up there. And right in the middle of it, all of a sudden, I heard myself saying to those guys, it's terrific! Then I knew what it was. It was something in the inside. And I find out that sometimes the happiness and joy that we get here is not happiness and joy per se. It's the absence of pain and discomfort. You know? And someone once said alcohol is not a drug that makes you happy. It's a drug that's a depression drug that removes your pain. You take enough of it and pretty soon you don't care. And I had this brought to me one time. I was brought out to Sepulveda. And I had some kind of an inner pain. I don't know what it was. And this was probably about 25 years ago. And they didn't know what it was. And I was just in absolutely excruciating pain. They finally took me out there because I was an old veteran. And they took me out to this thing out there. And the doctor gave me something in my arm. And I don't know what the hell he was giving me. And I found out later it was Demerol. Demerol. And pretty soon they were wheeling me down the goddamn hall to the operating room. And I told the nurse, I said, I sure do feel good. And she stuck a needle in my arm. She said, you don't feel anything. What do you mean you feel good? And it dawned on me later that what she was trying to tell me is that anesthetic drugs don't make you feel good. They remove the capacity to feel anything at all. And for some of us, life is hard, so we remove everybody. And I'm sure some of you are aware of the fact alcohol is the great remover. You know, not only removes spots, it moves houses, cars, wives, kids, everything to keep after. It's just a great remover, you know. And gets rid of all that. And pretty soon you say, nobody loves me. Who the hell would? You ever notice that? People who say people are no goddamn good usually wind up by themselves, you know. That's why I love about people who come to AA, their first year, and they fall in love. And I thought to myself, boy, this is fun. If you have peace of mind, get a relationship going. That's what you want to do. Get a good relationship. That'll drive you crazy. Then you get obsessed with them, you know, instead of with a program, you know. And the one nice thing about that is that if you stay, you know, if you happen to accidentally stay together, it's amazing. Because if you have programs, but I find out now that's very difficult for people like me. I have to have preoccupation with doing something about my life to make myself better. And I don't even know what the hell it is. I don't even know what better is. What is better? Chamberlain always used the expression, thank God for the good life. And I thought, what the hell is the good life? I find it's the absence of all the terror and the absence of all the confusion. The absence to be able to walk in someplace and give somebody a cake like, you know, like they were doing for me today. And they were doing it with love. God damn it, you know. I can remember giving Jack, old Happy Jack, who's an old friend of ours. He got about 26 years. As a matter of fact, he lived right around here for a while. And he moved back to somewhere in the South. A guy from New Jersey, I can just see him in the South. They probably think he talks awful funny, you know. He's down in the deep South, you know. But I remember Jack taking his first cake in Burbank, and I was his sponsor, and I was going to give him his cake. And he was a heavyweight fighter, you know, from New Jersey. He talked funny, just that, those, and them, and he was, and he was kind of a rough. He used to talk about hitting guys in the head and their eyes would pop out. He was a rough son of a bitch, beating them with chains and all that kind of shit. He was tough, you know. He was always talking about how tough he was. He was tough, and I was scared of him. Matter of fact, he's the only baby I ever had. I used to say, would you get in the car, sir? Remember? He called Jack. I was scared of Jack, really scared of old Jack. And Jack was going to take his first cake, and in Burbank, they got a little thing called the Victory Circle. They still have it, you know, and you put your name in there, and on Friday, they give you a cake, or Sunday, whichever the case may be. This was a Friday, and I was going to give Jack a cake. And all of a sudden, here I am, holding this chocolate cake in my hand with one candle on it, and here comes this goddamn Jack. Oh, this, that, doze, and dimmer. You know, I'm going to bust you in the head, I'm going to kill you, man, I'm going to knock you on you, you know, one of them kind of guys, you know. And he comes up to me, and he's got these great big crocodile tears running down his eyes, and he puts his arm around me, and he gives me a big hug, and he gives me a kiss on the cheek, and he said, thank you, I love you, Ed, man. And I got to cry, I said, I love you too, Jack. And I realized the first time in my life I'd ever felt love. I'd never felt love before. I was always expecting you to do it, and then I'll reciprocate. I had never experienced love in my life before, except when I gave a baby a cake. You know, and I wouldn't have done that if I'd have thought about it. You know, because you can look kind of goddamn silly up there blubbering. You know, but it just came over me, and I wish I could just take that home and grab it and know what I didn't know what it was. You know, I find out that sobriety is honest retrospect. Being able to look back and say, God damn, you see when that happened? Remember when that happened? You possibly can't get through this one, you know. God will take care of it. Sure, that's all right for you to say, fella. You know, you're not in the goddamn barrel. You know, you ever have some sponsor tell you it's going to be okay when it's okay for them and it's not for you? You ever have one like that? You're full of shit, man. It's some shit right there. Some bitch, you know. And about 2 or 3 months later, you find yourself telling somebody, it's going to be okay there. They're looking at you. And we keep coming back, and everything works out. Everything works out. I had a... Oh, I like that. I'll bet Clancy didn't get that noise. Did Clancy get that noise? No, he didn't get that noise. Anyway. Palm Desert, about 25 years ago, used to have a church down there. And they invited you down to talk. In those days, we didn't have any freeways. When they asked you to talk in Palm Desert, you had to take a lunch. Yeah. Went down to Palm Desert to talk. And just about the time they got you up to talk, my name's Ed, I'm an alcoholic. The church bells would ring for 5 minutes. And I just thought to myself, my God, what's going on here, you know? Because I'm not used to that. The gal said, can we take a collection while you're talking? I said, then I'll have to sit down, you know, because everybody disappears. Don't know what the hell goes on. You know, you can't give alkies a coffee break because you got to retrain them. You have a hell of a time, you know. As a matter of fact, Bill Wilson did not write the traditions to get groups reassembled, but that's what they use them for, most groups. Big groups, you know, they give them a coffee break, and then they have to read the traditions, get them all sat back down again. They're out there shooting the shit, laying some heavy crap on, you know. And some guy drove in from Arizona to talk. You know, I mean, it happens a lot of times. I remember one time going to a CA meeting to talk. I'll never forget this long as I live. They asked, you've got to come down, Ed. You're one of the old timers around NA and all, and AA. You've got to get down here and talk at our meeting. Big hospital down in Culver City. So I go down there to talk. And they had 45 chippers, and each chipper gave a 20-minute talk. And then they started on the cakes. And at 2:50, they said, our speaker for tonight is. So I led them in the Lord's Prayer is what I did. You know what I mean? I know what it's like, you know, what it's like to get involved in that kind of stuff, you know. Anyway, but old Ed arrived one day in a place, and I didn't know what was even going on. Because all of a sudden, one day, I found myself getting on airplanes. And the same thing, it really is funny because Carl talks like that. I got on an airplane one time, and this was an old Lockheed plane with three tails on it and propellers. You remember those? Yeah, I think they call it the Electra or Vega or something like that. And that's the first time I'd ever been on a plane. And I'm going back to Arkansas to talk. And goddamn, we got into a storm someplace like this. And there was a Catholic priest walking up down the aisles. I thought, oh shit, this is it, man. You know? And this goddamn, I never been in a plane before. And I'm scared to death, man. I'm, you know, about to wee-wee my drawers. Know what the hell's going on? But we finally get there. And I can't, if you put me in an automobile and drive for 48 days, I'll still be awake 48 days later. I can't go to sleep in anything moving like that, you know. And all of a sudden, we land somewhere, and I don't know what it is. You can go to Alaska, and they'll go to Dallas first. I don't know what that is. Anyway, they land in Dallas, and we finally get in some little old airplane that's flying over Arkansas. And you can see all the hillbillies down there, you know. We're just flying over Arkansas, and we finally get over there, you know. And they finally get me up to a place, and this is when they used to have the convention in Little Rock, you know, before they went to Hot Springs. And I get down there, and I get up in my room, and I'm just absolutely wore out. I'm just absolutely wore out. I haven't had any sleep, it seemed like, for 2 days. And I'm going to be the main speaker tonight. And I'm up there, and pretty soon I'm laying down in bed. I can't go to sleep because I'm wired. I'm drinking coffee. Nobody told me not to drink coffee 24 hours a day. I said, and there was a knock at the door, and a guy said, hi, you must be the guy Chuck's in. I was the guy. I didn't even have a name. I was just the guy Chuck's in. I said, Chuck who? Chuck who, you know. I know that experience. I know that feeling, you know. And so they started sending me places. Now, if they send you a lot of places and you're nobody, and it's really nothing in the world is more confusing for nobody to all of a sudden become somebody. Because Chamberlain used to give me little clues. He said, Ed, I think you're starting to read your clippings. I don't know what the hell he's talking about, you know. Because I'd go to, you name it, I was there. You name it, I was there. You know, you name it. Arkansas, Texas, there's old Ed. Hi there. Old Ed, the biggie, you know, the biggie. I'm going to blow Chamberlain out of the water. My dream one day was to come down the ramp and in some place in Texas, be in Chamberlain, walking down the ramp together, and we hear somebody say, who's the guy with Ed? Never happened. You know, I'm thinking that. I'm thinking all those things. And when you get to doing that kind of stuff, and I got a baby up in Ojai, and I just love the guy. His name is Jim. And he said, because he's got polio, he had to back away from all this, you know, going every place. He just can't do it anymore. But anyway, he said he had what is known as podium withdrawal. He said he found out that his program wasn't as good as his podium. He said he worked a hell of a podium. But not a hell of a program, you know. And I found myself doing that. I had nothing going at home. I was the speaker in Texas with 5,000 people. And I laid a message on them, and they all got serenity prayers on their chest, you know. And I get home, my wife says, where the fuck you been? You know, there wasn't anything going on. Wasn't nothing going on. And what I had done was to take all of this activity, not action, activity, and take the place of working a program one day at a time. And Chamberlain kind of used to tell me all the time, he said, Ed, just for a day, you are what you're giving away. That's all you are. What are you giving away? He said, and a program really isn't a program until you bring it home. And I thought, why does he say that? I mean, she doesn't understand. I mean, she'll never understand. I mean, I didn't ask for her. And there she is, and she has all them goddamn kids, and I'm stuck, you know. And I find out that a guy can get all involved. But the funny thing about all this, I never drank. And I was staying sober and enjoying AA, but I didn't know there was more to come. I didn't know there was a whole world And Chamberlain used to say to me all the time, Ed, you got to bring it home. You got to bring it home. You don't have any program unless you bring it home. It doesn't mean anything to have a program down at the club and then have no program at home. He said it'd be better if you had a program at home and didn't have too much at the club. He said, that's where it counts, and you don't have any. And I said, I don't know what the hell he's talking about. Screw you, Chuck. I didn't have the balls get a new sponsor, you know. He was trying to tell me all the time. And in his book, and if you read that book, New Pair of Glasses, he got a little thing in there. And he said, you got to uncover, discover, and discard. Uncover, discover, and discard. And if you've ever seen Chamberlain talk, he used to gesticulate a lot. He'd say, uncover, discover, and discard. He was always doing that. And it looks good, you know. Didn't mean anything. Matter of fact, none of the deeper things that he ever said to me meant anything until after he was gone. And that's one of the things he used to say to me all the time. He said, Ed, keep uncovering, discovering, and discarding. He said, keep doing it. Keep doing it. He said, nobody tries to destroy themselves unless they don't like themselves. People who like themselves don't try to kill themselves. It's people who hate themselves. And the great miracle of Alcoholics Anonymous is that if we kill ourselves before we find out who we are, we've killed the wrong person. That's not us. Because we're still waiting to come out. There we are. Hi there. I've been here waiting for you, asshole. You know. It's sort of a birth on the inside, you know. And he kept telling me that and telling me that. And it doesn't make any difference. Some people get what I learned in 30 years, learn in 10. 30 years later, I still didn't know that little thing. And I know guys in AA who do that all the time. Talk all over the world. And they got in there, and their wives don't even know who they're... They don't think they even know what their wife's first name is. You know. All right with me. I was there. I know all about that. You know, I know all about that. And so somewhere along the line, he kept telling me that. And one day I found out by uncovering and discovering and discarding. Because I think that everybody has some deep-rooted fear on the inside. Some kind of an insecurity. Something that says, I'm not as good-looking as they are. I'm not as smart as they are. I don't have as much money. I'm a little lesser than they are. So I'm going to have to put on some kind of a goddamn act so they'll think I'm as good, if not better, than they are. And so I spend all my life acting. I don't know, so how in the hell do I know who I am when I'm pretending all the time? And I come to AA and you want me to open up, look inside, and find out who the hell I am. Well, I don't want to look in there because there's anything in there. There's a little 2-inch turd. It's all that's in there. You know, and if I get too close to you, you're going to say, my God, you sure have a nice 2-inch turd there, fella. And I know you're going to say that eventually. And that makes it very difficult to have a relationship with a woman under a house on a regular basis when you know if you get too close to her, she's going to say, look at that turd. You know? So you got to pretend all the time, you know, there's somebody cool, far out, man, what's happening, you know, all that kind of shit. That's hard to do 365 days a year at home. Be cool all the time, man, to cover up the turd, you know. And the amazing part of Alcoholics Anonymous, it's almost like saying whatever it is that created the universe really screwed up when he made me. I know that God has done all these wonderful things, but look at what he did with me. You really screwed up here, Charlie, you know. There's nothing here but a turd. Uncover, discover, discard. Yep, there's a turd. And I find out that's not true. I find out that whatever it is that runs the universe played a trick on all of us. With all the wonderful parts of all that it makes life wonderful are all within. You know, it's all there. The power's within. Everything is within. And all the parts for a good life are there. They're all there. But I got to uncover the parts that don't belong. And the job in AA is not removing what is, it's removing what isn't. So that what is will finally be there. And I never met anybody in my life who was having a successful day to day who wasn't themselves. Because that's the best you can be. That is absolute best you can be. Yourself. And not be ashamed of, oh, I'm a turd, you know. You want me to talk? Well, shit, I really don't have a goddamn thing. But I'll get up there anyway. I don't have any goddamn thing to say, but I'm up here anyway, you know. It's not true. Not true. And I find out, a friend of mine, he used to be a baby of mine the first year he was sober. Then he got smart and got a good sponsor. And his name was Bobby Earl. You know. And Bobby Earl used to always say that his mother and father hated him because he used to put shoes on him so tight he could hardly walk. He said he even damaged his feet, or even today his feet are damaged by the fact that he wore shoes that were too small. And so when he finally got older, he come to the conclusion his mom and dad hated him. That's why they put those kind of shoes on him, you know. And then when he got older and he was supposed to have relationships and do things like get married, you know, and all that kind of stuff, he knew that if he married some woman, she wouldn't love him, because if mom and dad don't love you, nobody's going to love you. Don't you understand? How in the hell are you going to get anybody to love you when mom and dad don't love you? Mom and dad don't love you, nobody's going to love you. So he knew in front nobody ever loved him. And then finally one day it dawned on me, I know what my problem always has been, and AA has been letting me cover it up for years, is that I feel unloved. That's what it is, you know. Oh, I've shared my body a time or two. I've had my bones jumped. I mean, come on. Everybody can get lucky once in a while, you know. I'm so insecure, I asked the girl, was that okay? You know, that's kind of insecure, right? She said, compared to who? You know. And one day I discovered what it was. And then Chamberlain gave me the greatest message I've ever learned. Matter of fact, it ought to be written on the walls of every building in the world, you know, it should be. And this is what he said. He said, if you uncover and discover long enough, he said, one day you'll find out what's missing. And I finally found out what was missing. I don't feel loved. Now, when you don't feel loved, I'll tell you what you do. I know what I did. I'm always looking for it. With qualifications, like I know what it is. And they never seem to do it. What you want them to do, so you got to go find somebody else. Them sons of bitches won't fix it. You ever notice that? Go get them. Screw you, bitch. I'll go get somebody who will. Okay, honey. Ah, there we are. Hot dog, you know. Wowie, hot to hell. What are you trying to do? Run my ass life? You know, come on. Move on, move on, move on. And the reason for that is I'm always looking. Go into bars and sit around and look and see if I can find her. I know she's going to be someplace. Because that's a fairy tale. You're going to meet her someday. You know, there she is, you know. And you meet some sick old gal in a bar who's away from her husband because he's a son of a bitch, you're not going to get a good relationship out of that one. It just isn't going to work. Two assholes, you know, if you want to get rid of the asshole, you don't add another one. You know what I mean? It just don't work. And so one day Chuck told me that if I found out what it was, this is what I do. And he'd been telling me this for years and I didn't hear it. He said, find out what it is that's missing and don't look for it anymore. Start giving it away, and there it is. And I said, I'll be goddamn. He said, you want love in your life? Start being the lover. And he used to always use this expression. He said, in this meeting tonight, and of course, this is a day meeting, this would apply here. He said, there are lovers and lovees. Now the difference is, the lovers will leave here feeling love. The lovees will leave feeling no love at all, because they're looking for it. The lovers are the ones that go around loving the unlovable, until one day they learn to be the lovers instead of the lovees. Then they find the magic of Alcoholics Anonymous. And when a stockbroker from New York, you know, can talk to a proctologist in Akron, Ohio, and he's loving him and doesn't even know he's doing it, I think that's pretty far out. Then there are two of them. Here's an AH doctor, you know, and a guy that works with his head. That's working both ends, right? Going to make a call on a guy who's an attorney who can't stay sober either. And they're loving him and don't even know they're doing it. And then they want to know why some guys like me are still here. It's because that I was loved in spite of myself. You know, I'm not sober because of me. I'm sober in spite of myself. I'm still here, you know. And the reason was that they loved me. The time I walked in Burbank, and Chamberlain always loved me. And he gave me answers that you should not give to anybody. I would call him up and tell him about my wife. This is my first wife, Doris. About how she was treating me and how she was making me feel. And he'd say, no, wait a minute. We don't talk about our wives. He said, if you call me up, want to talk about yourself, we'll talk. We're not talking about... I said, but she makes me feel... He said, did you ever feel that way before you met her? And I said, oh, sure. He said, then why are you blaming her for the way you feel? She had nothing to do with it. She's your excuse. Let's go to work on you. Let's take a look at the feelings. Let's recognize them, and let's ask whatever it is that runs the universe, if or he or she or it will take it. Are you willing to turn it over? But you got to see that it's there. He never can get rid of a defect of character as long as you're pointing at somebody else and saying they're the reason. Because they're the son of a bitch that needs the help, not you. You could fill the Coliseum with assholes that are messing up your life and say, God, straighten out this group now, and by God, there's another bunch over here. I got to get myself in some kind of working order, emotionally, mentally, and I got to believe, you know. They say, what do you believe? Who cares? As long as I believe. And people even today, after all, after 39 years, but today's the day. But after 39 years, you say, what do you believe? That has no bearing on it. I believe that this works. I'm positive proof. Because you can't stay sober if you're like me, or Carl, or Leroy. You can't stay sober. But here we are. Well, difference in years. I mean, what the hell difference that made? We're still here. We're sober. Why are we sober? Because the obsession left. And the obsession left, and in its place, people have been loving me. And I didn't even know it. Didn't even know it. And now, today, things are a little different. I rarely go anyplace. Now, right now, I'm really in a difficult place right now. Because my wife broke her leg April the 30th. She's a miracle of Alcoholics Anonymous. She's got 16 years. She broke her leg. Broke her femur in two places. Women who get past a certain age and are gone past menopause get a little bit of osteoporosis. Not real osteoporosis, but a little bit, which makes the bones a little more. So it's harder for her. Now her leg is an inch shorter, you know. And she's having a difficult time. She can't get off of the goddamn walker. And I knew there was no way in God's green earth I could get her into this meeting. You know, once I put her on my back, I can say, here comes Father Teresa. Couldn't do it. So I didn't do it. So I didn't bring her with me. But I never go anyplace. Now, I can remember that, you know, you could ask me to talk anywhere at any time, twice on the same day, and I'd be there. Whether I got divorced tomorrow or not, whether I got fired tomorrow or not, I'm going to be there, you know. There you are. You know. And I had no idea that Alcoholics Anonymous teaches you how to work on your job and give them a good day's work. I didn't know that. I didn't know that it teaches you how to be a husband, how to be a father, how to be a friend. You know, instead of going around looking for people to care for me, learn how to care instead. To be the one who cares instead of the one looking around to be cared. I was always wanting to be cared for. You ever get that feeling? And if you're that way, if you're like me, you're looking for somebody to take care of you with instructions on how to do it. You ever notice that? I used to do that. And then again, instead of running around all over the place every day looking for somebody to love, learn how to do it instead. And now, you know, my wife is one of the miracles. There are two women in particular that just blow me away when I stop and think about it. One is a little gal I met about 25 years ago. And she was 14 years of age. And she came into a group we used to have down on Wilshire Boulevard called the Polly Hall Meeting. She came in there. She was 14 years of age. She was from Venice. And she was drunk and using drugs all the time. And she lived by robbing the other drunks that were passed out. That's what she did. And she had an afro-looking hairdo. And it was red. And one day they made the mistake of calling her up. She had about a month. They called her up and she got up and said, screw you bastards, I don't need any of this shit. That's what she said. I heard her, but she stayed there. She kept coming back week after week, month after month, year after year. And about 3 years ago, I went down to Venice to talk at a meeting, and she asked me to come down and talk. And she said, I'm taking a cake, for whatever amount of years it was. It was a lot of years. And in the meantime, this gal who didn't even finish junior high school graduated from UCLA with a law degree. You know, magna cum laude. I mean, she really did. And she graduated from another school with another law degree. I don't know why she went and got two law degrees. And she's been an attorney ever since. And I gave this beautiful young lady this cake, and she was up there telling people how grateful she was to be a member of this fellowship and how much it had done for her. And I'd seen it, man. I'd seen it. You know, I'd seen all the things it had done for this girl. Her name is June G. Maybe some of you know June. Anyway, there was this beautiful lady. And while she's up there with tears running down her eyes telling everybody how grateful she was to be sober and taking that cake, I thought, when's she going to say, screw you bastards, I don't need you out there. Yeah. And my Ginny, you know, who I honestly believe God did send. I really believe that. God did, because I can't pick nobody up. I don't know what to look for, really. You know, she never finished high school. You know, she got drunk. She wound up in funny farms. Camarillo was her favorite. She loved that up there. They gave her lots of good shit. Thorazine, shuffled on all. And she'd been a lot of them, and she overdosed a couple of times. One time, the doctor told her husband, Bob, at the time, that she would never be alive by morning. She tried to kill herself one time in a place they just moved into. She stuck her head in the after taking some pills and some alcohol, stuck her head in the oven, turned the gas on to kill herself. But they hadn't turned the gas on yet, so she was still there the next morning. And after she'd been sober about 2 years, she decided she'd go down and take that GED test, the equivalency, and by God, she passed it. Even though her mother told her she was dumb and ugly, she passed it anyway. And so she decided to go to Citrus College, and she went to Citrus College, which is about a mile from where I live. And she graduated 2 years later, and I was there when she did it. And she was the only one that had that. She had a gold tassel, which is not too shabby. And she's the only one with this great big smile on her face. Looked like Chuck Chamberlain, for Christ's sake. Here she was down there. Everybody else was just graduating. But she was right there. And I knew what she was thinking. God damn, this AA is terrific. You know? And guess what degree she got? An AA degree. And they gave her. And she graduated with about a 3.7. Now, I find out now, to learn, you have to learn to learn. And she didn't know how to learn, but she was learning to learn. And she graduated with a 3.7, which isn't too bad. So she got a lot of grants. And so she decided to go out to Laverne University, and they asked her what she wanted to be. So she said, I think I'd like to be a school teacher. Somebody said, well, hell, you'll be 53 when you graduate. She said, I'm going to be 53 anyway. So she went out there, and she graduated out of there with 4.0 grade average. She learned to learn. Man, she learned to learn. And now she's got about 8 or 9 different kinds of degrees, and they're all over the wall. And I got a couple of plaques about talking in Texas. All them goddamn plaques over there. And she has learned in a few years, 16 if you want to call it, few, you know, in a few years, some of the things that took me over 30 to learn. She tells me all kinds of things all the time. And when I first got married to her, it was very difficult because she'd say things to me like, you're so beautiful, Ed. And I think, wait till she sees the turd, man. I had friends that would tell me, oh, Ed, thanks for coming over tonight. God, you're beautiful. We really love you. And I think, why do they tell me that? You know, it makes you a little uncomfortable when people are telling you that you're beautiful when you know deep down inside where they can't see yet that you really aren't. And I'm the last to know. I'm the last to know that whatever it is that created the universe made us all beautiful. We got to find it. And now we have the goddamn tools. We just uncover, discover, and discard. And little by little, one day, where the hell you been? Where the hell have you been? When I first got sober, there was a song that was very popular. It was called Getting to Know You. And I realized how significant it was, because I'm getting to know me, getting to know all about me. How to get up in the morning and not put my head in a toilet bowl. You know? How to walk out of the house, come back in the same day, and I haven't thrown up on myself. You know? I haven't peed my pants. I do all kinds of things. I go to work on a job, and I go there all the time. My boss told me here about a month ago, gosh, Ed, one thing I really love about you is you really are dependable. I thought, he didn't know me in a good old days, boy, you know. I remember couldn't get off my back. I knew I was supposed to go to work, but I just couldn't get up. You ever been like that? You know you're supposed to get, but you just can't get up. You can't, so you have another drink, pass out instead. And here I am, have people telling me I'm dependent. My wife telling me I'm beautiful. And she tells me she loves me. Now, in conclusion, learning how to love should be the end. That should be it. There's my theme song. Anyway. Hey, stand up and bow. Anyway, learning how to love, that should be it. That should be the most you can learn out of Alcoholics Anonymous. But if you're as inadequate as I have always been, and insecure as I've always been, that's all right to have people love you. Yeah, I mean to learn to love. Because I learned to love babies a long time ago. But how about loving your woman? Now today, I love my woman. I love her. I'm going to cook her dinner tonight. You know, I cooked her dinner last night. I'm a pretty goddamn good cook. I got a convection microwave and all that kind of good shit. Man, I learned to cook. And I love to do wonderful things for her. The reason for it is that AA has taught me how to do the loving. And I learned to love. You know, doesn't mean we get along 100%, 365 days a year. Because every once in a while, she gets out in left field and so do I. But we're both members of AA. And I love her. And she tells me that I'm a beautiful man. She said, you're such a beautiful man. And all of a sudden, one day, it finally dawned on me that she was talking about me, the real me. I am, you know. And I'm just going to have to admit it, too. Ed, goddammit, you've got to quit going around telling people this and telling people that when you're just as beautiful as they are. Everybody is. Now, I look around this room today, and there's a room full of people who are beautiful. Now, maybe some of the people in the room don't know they are, but they are. All they got to do is work these old step rows. Don't go away. Remember, those who stay here are the ones who stay here. And somewhere along the line, all of a sudden one day, up will emerge the person you are. The person that, whatever it is that made this universe, made in the first place. And you're beautiful. You're absolutely beautiful. And then you get tears in your eyes because you almost destroyed yourself before you met yourself. And AA, we get to meet ourselves. We don't go around blaming God for who and what we are. We thank Him because we're all terrific, you know. And the reason we're terrific is because we have each other. Now, remember, the day before I met you, I was absolutely nothing. And I don't think I'm anything today. And the reason I'm not anything today is because without you, I'm nothing. So because I have you, I may be something. But without you, I'm nothing. So I'm going to get better, and I'm going to get better, and I'm going to get better, and I'm going to get better. And if you can get the secretary to get me back here next year, you will get a better speaker because I'll be better. I guarantee it, because I'm going to keep coming back, because without you, I'm nothing. So don't you go away so I can live. If you go away, I'll die. Thank you very much.